let's try to get a collective perspective now on the mitzvah srichas kavana sugya and all the parts. And we had left off with some comments about the ra'ah and the ra'ah's position that has implications in both directions. And the ra'ah maintaining that you don't need kavana for mitzvos, and that even negative kavana doesn't undo that. And yet, also having a higher standard for when you don't need kavana. That in order for you not to need kavana, you need to have at least a knowledge of what's going on. And we understood from him that what he was saying is that the idea of kavana by mitzvos is the question of awareness. That as long as you have awareness, so then there is enough within that act that it's going to count. And the fact that you're not interested in that doesn't undermine that. You need to have awareness in order for a mitzvah act to be inherently, objectively a mitzvah. And your connection to that personally as a desire to fulfill God's will is not necessarily going to help. It's not necessarily going to matter. And therefore, turning it off also doesn't have an impact. While others who believe that turning it off does do something, that negative kavana does do something, that you can control it, really are understanding the whole concept of kavana differently. And understanding it as a question of desire for an act to be significant as a mitzvah. And apparently that's what they mean when they address the question of whether mitzvahs need kavana or not. And within that perspective, when you say it does not need kavana, what you mean is that it is preloaded with a presumption of kavana. And that going this far and doing this much with these tools, that all suggests kavana. But if you were to actively thwart it, not the case. And yesterday, just to connect the topics, so yesterday we explained that Sfiras HaOmer has an interesting relationship with this whole concept, because you could possibly bifurcate. When it comes to Sfiras HaOmer, you have an action of counting, and that action may not necessarily only have to be a mitzvah. That we explained that Rav Soloveitchik's position was that when you count during the day, Sfiras HaOmer, without a bracha, so the value of that is that you are keeping up a structure to count, even if it's not always a kiyum mitzvah. So the fact that you could have one with the other is unusual and interesting, and that may itself explain certain dinim. So just the one we'll recap from yesterday, the one that's particularly relevant here. So we talked about the question of, let's say somebody is in shul, and it's, let's say, a Friday afternoon this time of year, and they're davening early. So the minyan after, the minyan around plag. So the mincha before plag, and the ma'ariv after plag. So they're reminding you to count sfira then. But really, it's too early. And it's quite a stretch to say that you can count after plag. So the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Machzer Vitri that you can count then without a bracha. And then, if you remember later, you can still count with a bracha. And if you don't remember later, you can still count the following nights with a bracha. So we mentioned yesterday two ways to understand that. Either you could understand it as an example of what we're talking about here, of a conditional mitzvah idea. That because you're trying to hedge your bets, so you make a plan like this, and you say, if I remember later, this should count as sfira. That should count as sfira. When I remember later, that should count as sfira. And this, what I'm doing now, in this very not ideal slot, that should be nothing. And indeed, apparently, according to the Shulchan Aruch, that deflates that mitzvah completely. It's now nothing, and you can count later with a bracha. But if it turns out that you forget to count later, then retroactively, because of the condition, then your kavana does kick in, and that initial act counts, and even though it's not ideal time, but at least it's enough to rely on, so you should be able to keep counting from that point on. Right, that's one understanding of the Shulchan Aruch. Everybody with me on that? It's a very complicated idea. And Rav Soloveitchik's understanding was totally different. And according to him, that to count after plag really doesn't work at all for the mitzvah. And that's why you don't make the bracha. So what does it accomplish if it's not a mitzvah? What it accomplishes is that at least it's going to work to maintain the structure of the count. So it's basically like counting during the day. You keep up the structure, yes, but the mitzvah, you don't have at all. And we noted also that this could also address the following question. All right, let's say somebody says to you, tonight after dark, let's say somebody says, after dark on a random night of Sfira, what's tonight before you have a chance to count? And you say, it's 12. And then you realize you haven't counted yet, you still want to count with a bracha. So you want to argue, well, I should still be able to count with a bracha, because when I just said to the guy's question, it's 12, I had no intent to fulfill the mitzvah, and you can tell I had no intent to fulfill the mitzvah because I didn't make the bracha that I wanted to make, and I didn't phrase it as 1 week and 5 days like I normally would. So therefore, I have a negative intent, so I should be able to count again with the bracha. That's your position. And then the next day, the same thing happens, and you tell the guy it's day 13 in the exact same way. But in that case, you forget to count later. So when on day 14 you want to pick up, you say, well, it's okay because I answered this guy's question when he asked me, so that should at least count to allow me to keep going. So is that trying to have it both ways? Is that a logical contradiction, a tarte de sasre? Because when it worked for you to have it not count, you said it didn't count. And now it works for you to have it count, so you want to argue it does count. Is that a tenable position? All right.
For Soloveitchik, it's not totally fine because you're just totally separate from the mitzvah recitation. So
exactly. All right, so Soloveitchik, like a lot of these pieces, Soloveitchik's idea saves that. Right? It doesn't necessarily decide the first issue of whether it counts or not, but it allows you to realistically hold both positions. That you could maintain that, okay, I had negative kavana for the first thing, it shouldn't count to stop me from making another bracha. But it's not inconsistent to say that it does keep me going, because it doesn't have to be a mitzvah in order to keep me going. So now, considering this whole question of the different perspectives on what kavana is, and seeing that Ra'a and others seem to not really be talking the same language as far as what kind of kavana we're talking about. So, practically speaking, what's the halacha, mitzvah srichas kavana? What does it actually demand of us? So, we've seen that it seems to be a machlokas on many levels, that the Gemara presents conflicting opinions. The Rishonim hold on to conflicting opinions. The Rambam himself may contain conflicting opinions within just the Rambam. And what's the story in the Shulchan Aruch? Right, so you saw by now the Shulchan Aruch and Siman Samach. Right, so what's his language? That we require kavana, even though he notes that it's a machlokas. He says, yesh omrim, that mitzvahs don't need kavana, and yesh omrim, that they do, v'chein ha-halacha. So, what exactly is the impact of that particular position? Is he taking an across-the-board position? is he taking a position misafik? Right, that's how some of the commentaries in the Shulchan Aruch read it, that because this is an issue that is unresolved, so therefore he's assuming that we should do this, particularly because Kriya Shema is a mitzvah in the Torah. Right, in Kriya Shema, by the way, you saw the Ra'ah that I sent around today. So he notes there are a number of different levels of Kavana that may even be relevant. Maybe Kriya Shema by itself is already a whole different kind of mitzvah. Right, where Ra'ah notes that even though he says mitzvos ain't srichos Kavana, according to him, but why does the Gemara have to even ask in the context of Kriya Shema? And there he establishes that there are a couple of different levels. There is the level of misasek, where you don't even know that you're doing anything. So that wouldn't count, even according to us, he would say, even according to those of us who say mitzvos ein srichos kavana. There is kavana to be doing the mitzvah purposefully. So that you don't need. And then there is potentially additional aspects specific to Kriya Shema. So when the Shulchan Aruch says it in this context, we don't necessarily know whether he's talking about Kriya Shema specifically or all mitzvahs, even though the language sounds a little bit like he is paskening the whole issue. Right, in general, and it's an interesting question about the style of Shulchan Aruch. Shulchan Aruch doesn't really have a klolim section. In a sense, Shas doesn't either, if you think about it. Like the whole idea of klolim hamitzvos, what are general mitzvah principles, what are the rules? Like, where would you expect mitzvah srichas kavana to be settled within Shulchan Aruch, or to be settled within Shas? Right, we don't have a mesechta for that. You don't have a introductory section. We say, okay, here are the basic working rules. So we just have to look to specific halachos and see how they're treated and try to glean from there what the basic rules are. So here, if you have this in the context of Kriya Shema, so the language sounds like he's talking about mitzvah srichas kavana in general. But in the context of Kriya Shema, so it leaves room for some questions to clarify. Is that specific to Kriya Shema because it's a mitzvah min haTorah? Is it because of its particular nature? So all of this is open for discussion. But the language that he says, v'chein halacha, seems to sound like he's not saying it just misafik, even though that's how some of the commentaries read it. And as we discussed last week, the Magen Avraham brings from the Radbaz, although it's questionable where this Radbaz is, that mitzvahs daraisa need and mitzvahs darabanan don't. And we discussed that that might be a policy of Safek, that if we're not sure, so we have to be machmir by the mitzvahs daraisa, and we can be makel by the darabanan. And even though we discussed last week a big argument to stay the opposite direction, but maybe that's a part of this also. So one way or another, what we'll see in the next few minutes is that there is a big overlap, probably, any way you look at it. Because when it comes to our relationship to this din, so even if you say, mitzvos ein srichos kavana, so does that mean that there's no value in having kavana? That we wouldn't instruct you to ideally have intent when doing mitzvahs? Well, it's hard to say that that's the perfect avodas Hashem, to do mitzvahs without any awareness. And indeed, many Rishonim spell this out. So among them is Rabbeinu Yonah. Rabbeinu Yonah in the end of the first parak of Brachos, where he notes that l'chadchila, for sure, mitzvos need kavana. That the position of mitzvos ein srichos kavana doesn't mean that we're not going to ask you to have intent by mitzvos. It just means that l'maisa, the mitzvah will count without kavana. it's checked off the list. But doesn't mean that there isn't a value to having kavanah. This is itself interesting, as Dechemet points out, that they also discuss there that the Rif is among those who maintain mitzvos need kavanah. And the proof is, also in the context of Kriyat Shema, that the Gemara in Brachos says that Reb Zeira would work to have kavanah for the first pasuk of Kriyat Shema. And that's part of a whole discussion in the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema, exactly how much does it actually involve? Does it require, what we say, the three paragraphs, or the first paragraph, or the first pasuk? So part of that discussion is this Gemara, that he pushed to have kavanah for the first pasuk. So as the Chemed points out, it's hard to bring a proof, really, because everyone would seem to agree, the lechachila, you need to have kavanah. So the fact that he made an effort to be mechaved for this first pasuk doesn't necessarily really tell us anything about the question of mitzvot srichos kavanah. It sounds like that question exists independently. Does that answer the question?
I would think that it would be like the opposite, that it would show generally mitzvot don't need kavanah, but here is unique.
That Kriyat Shema might be unique.
Yeah,
there's a big svar to say like that, which is part of why the Shulchan Aruch is a little unclear. Right? The fact is, taking the position here gives us a little room for ambiguity. You know, on the one hand, the language certainly sounds general, but the fact that it's in this context, it does open up the question that maybe there's unique requirements for Kriyat Shema. Right? And we do find some of the Rishonim explicitly saying that we find really Tosfos on our daf, right? Tosfos on daf Kuf Tezvav in Pesachim, making this point that different mitzvos might require different levels of kavanah. And also, just to highlight some of the splitting of categories here, so to go to that Tosfos, right? Our Tosfos and our daf and Kuf Tezvav in Pesachim. So Tosfos seems to say that even according to mitzvos tzrichos kavanah, right, even if we say that mitzvos need kavanah, if you do a mitzvah without kavanah, so the mitzvah still has a status of a mitzvah. How do you see that from Tosfos? Because the Tosfos was talking about that whole scenario in the Gemara where if you have maror-worthy food for karpas, whether or not that would put you in fulfillment of the mitzvah even without intending to. But Tosfos says there that even if you say that's not true, that mitzvah srichos kavanah, so the maror-worthy karpas you had doesn't count as maror, but still Tosfos says you can have the bracha from the beginning. You can have the bracha already made there, because that will also count as the beginning of the mitzvah, even though you're not yotzei with it. And he compares it to the different types of tekiyos. So it sounds like even though you're not machaved for the mitzvah, and therefore it's not going to count, so to speak, it still has a mitzvah status to it. And that highlights a little bit, and the Kajigal of Arav has an essay about this in one of his chuvos, that the mitzvah exists as a mitzvah even without your kavanah. And the whole issue of mitzvah srichos kavanah or not has to do with your connection to it and whether you accomplish your goals. And then once we start looking at it like that, then the question could also be split up, accomplish your goals in two senses of the word, meaning that okay, it's checked off your list, there's no point in doing it later because you've done it. But it's possible to say that yes, it's checked off your list, but you still haven't fully accomplished your spiritual mission here. And then the whole question of schar, which is a little bit of a nebulous issue, as Jassy was pointing out last week, but the assumption that the schar mitzvah should be equal with or without kavanah seems hard to imagine any of that. Right? If we say that l'fuch tzara agra, that there's going to be some correlation between a person's effort and the schar. So it seems very unlikely that somebody who does a mitzvah with full awareness and full intention is going to be rewarded the same way, whatever that means, as somebody who just happens to do a mitzvah without paying any attention at all. So in terms of the spiritual benefit, it would seem like it's really a separate question. And then the question is just, is it checked off your list or not? The whole question of mitzvah srichas kavanah, mitzvah slo srichas kavanah. And there are some who indeed say like that, some among the Rishonim and some among the Achronim. There's a comment in the Meiri like this. It's a very depressing kind of comment. And it says that if you do a mitzvah without kavanah, according to the Manda Amar, mitzvos ain't srichos kavanah. So yes, the mitzvah counts, it's checked off. But there's no personal schar for that. Which is kind of a depressing thought, if that's indeed the case. But it just also reflects this idea that maybe we have a bifurcation here. And on the one hand, we have the idea of the mitzvah being fulfilled in and of itself, and the question of what does it accomplish for the person who's doing it. Okay, so far so good. Everybody with me? So that applies and has impact on many levels. It might mean that, yes, the mitzvah is mekuyim, but you're not necessarily in accomplishment of your goals. You know, the question then also could be posed, do you have the option of doing it again if you want to? Right? We know that when it comes to brachos, so brachos is always a problem, and that's one of the major ramifications of this issue in the context of Sfiras HaOmer and the like. But brachos is its own din with its own rules. But even separate from the bracha question, if you do a mitzvah twice, does the second time have any significance? The question is hard to paskin, right? Because it's really, we call it nafka mina l'shamayim. So it's up to the Rebbeinu Shel, and we don't really have a way of deciding this through the normal methods of psak. But if you did a mitzvah without kavanah, and you were yotzei, is there a value to doing it again? And this also comes up in questions that are related. Let's say if you do a mitzvah in a b'dievet fashion. So is there a value to doing it again in the chachila fashion? Even if you were yotzei the first time. So again, the question of making a bracha on it a second time, so that we would do mostly for its own reasons of the danger of an unnecessary bracha. But the question of the mitzvah act, is that something that you could choose to do it again? And it would count for something? All right. So that's also an interesting question that is raised, you know. So should we worry that if you're going to do it an extra time, maybe that has the taint of Baal Tosef associated with it? Although we do find that sometimes mitzvahs are done again mishum safek, and then having that in mind presumably gets you around the Baal Tosef issue, but it's not a open and shut case. It's not something that is not raised at all. Now, there is a story that they say about the Reb Chaim Brisker, but it happens to be also it's a tshuva in the base of Levi, Reb Chaim's father. So if you prefer it as the story version said about the son or the printed version, you can find it in the father's tshuvas. It's kind of a brain teaser question. Let's say on Sukkos, somebody offers you two possible esrogim to use. One esrog is definitely kosher, but you're not sure if it qualifies as mahudah. The other esrog is definitely mahudr, it looks great, but you have some suffix about it, you're not sure if it's kosher. So what should you do? How should you relate to that offer? Ari?
If you, I don't know, to tell some room, like if you're grabbing something which you don't necessarily know is going to work, then you're setting yourself up for failure.
Okay.
The safer option.
So one would imagine, right, that the more important thing to do is to focus on making sure that it's acceptable. So go for the kosher esrog and be happy with that. So Reb Chaim actually reportedly recommended the opposite, as intuitive as what you just said is, that you should actually take the suffik kosher one first and then take the definitely kosher one afterwards. Which also, as some of the Sfarim also talk about, presents its own brachos question. Are you allowed to do that, make a bracha, and then intersperse the suffik one first? A little bit related to our Tosfos that we just mentioned in our daf. But the logic of the Beis Halevi and Reb Chaim is that if you take the definitely kosher one first, so that's it. You're yotze. So there's no value now to taking the mehudar one after that, because you've already accomplished the mitzvah by taking the definitely kosher one. But if you do it the other way around, so then you're hedging your bets, because if it turns out that the first one is kosher, so good, it was kosher and mehudar. And if not, then you'll still take the definitely kosher one afterwards, so you'll definitely get a kosher esrog. But by taking the definitely kosher one second, you have your odds increased that you will have one that is both kosher and mehudar. So the point, the relevance here, is that the whole assumption seems to be that once you've done a mitzvah and you're yotze, you're not going to accomplish anything by coming back and trying to do it perfectly. So the whole role of kavanah and mitzvos, really a lot of practicality is going to come down to these kinds of issues, that we know v'l'chadchila for sure you should do mitzvos with kavanah. But the question, what are the nafkaminas really? Nafkaminas are going to be, so if you didn't, does the mitzvah count at all? Which is also going to really be a nafkamina l'shamayim, because very often it doesn't have so many practical applications, except for some of these scenarios like we've been talking about Sfiras Omer and the like. But also the question of, if you did a mitzvah without kavana, so can you and should you do it again? So does the opportunity still exist for you to do the mitzvah in the perfect way, which sometimes also will be a nafkamina l'shamayim, you know, it's something that Kadosh Baruch Hu is evaluating, you don't really have access to per se, but it's a question of occasionally there'll be practical ramifications. Sam?
Can I ask a question on the story?
Sure.
So when he says to do the suffik other one first, presumably that's, I mean, maybe it's wrong, but I would think that would be without a bracha. And if that's the case, wouldn't that cancel out whatever either you're doing?
So, maybe, but that's actually not the presumption, even though it makes sense. Because you're addressing an issue, which is a real issue, though that's not necessarily the recommendation. That the Tshuvas Nefesh Chaya talks about some of the other Sfarim that discuss this stuff, and they bring up that question. Because, presumably, what you're saying is that, as we've been discussing, the mitzvos have to have the brachos all go asiyos, and the bracha has to be right before. So, you can't have some random act in the middle. So if this other esrog may not be kosher, it seems problematic to say you'll make the bracha on the esrog, and then before actually fulfilling that mitzvah, you are interrupting with a non-kosher esrog. So it is something that the Sfarim try to work with. Presumably, what he's assuming here is that your pursuit of the mitzvah is not a hefsek. So you made the bracha, and right away you are doing actions that are all relevant to the mitzvah. And in order to make sure that you fulfill the mitzvah, you are taking first the suffik esrog and then taking the perfect esrog, or taking the definitely kosher esrog out. So because that's all the actions that you're doing in pursuit of the mitzvah, it's still called overlasiyasan. But it's not an obvious point, and that is a topic of discussion. But the other way that we were suggesting is not going to work, because to make wait for the bracha afterwards. So then you really would have a problem with the suffik, because there's a good chance that you are yotze with that first esrog. Now maybe you could do a tanai, you know, which is an interesting question, maybe similar to the what we said before about Sfiras Omer, that maybe you can make a tanai and say that I'll pick up the suffik esrog, and I'm really not sure if it's good, So I don't want to make a bracha on it, but it's hard, you know, because I don't know if it fits the same way as the Sfira Somer kind of question. So it would seem like you really need to make the bracha beforehand, and to work off this whole answer, the Chaim's whole approach, works off the premise that it's not going to constitute a hefzik. Even though it seems like an issue that needs to be clarified. Yeah, sorry.
Also just with the bracha with the Tanai, wouldn't it still be a problem, even if you believe that you could make Tanai, things like that? But your Tanai would be that the bracha like wouldn't count, but like wouldn't you still have said like Hashem's name? Like,
yeah, no, so that wouldn't be the Tanai. The Tanai would be that if... Yeah, it's not gonna be comparable enough to Sfira for that. I don't think it's gonna work. Right. So when it comes to the Sfira situation, by the time you make the bracha, the second count, you know that you're remembering now, so you know that you've invalidated the first one. You don't have those same mechanics as far as Esrog is concerned. So it's not gonna work. So the best you'd have to say is that the only real solution, it would seem, is to say that the suffix one is not a hefzik. Because your other point is also well taken, right? That if you say, well, in order to try to cover all my bets here, I'm going to skip the bracha. So you're right, that would be a loss that would probably be more than not having the most perfect esrog. So that wouldn't be a good answer either. So out of all your possibilities here, the only somewhat tenable possibility seems to be to say that you'll make the bracha and allow that to count. So all of this again goes to this question of, is there an inyan to separate out the two? Now the idea that you could say that you do have to have kavana, but still you could say mitzvos ain't srichos kavana, that a mitzvah could count without kavana, even though you really do have to have kavana. So there are a couple ways to explain that, because according to the position of some Rishonim, you have a little bit of a challenge, because some Rishonim maintain that the whole concept of L'chadchila and B'di'eved does not exist when dealing with mitzvos min ha-Torah. Some Rishonim maintain that mitzvos min ha-Torah are all or nothing, which may be a related idea to mitzvos ein srichos kavana and other things that we've talked about, that the mitzvos min ha-Torah are kind of objective. They're all black and white, relatively speaking. So the notion that you could have it should be this way, but b'di'eved, it's still good, some Rishonim maintain that does not exist by mitzvos min ha-Torah. So if that's true, how could it be that really you have to have kavana for mitzvos, but they're still good even without it? How could that still follow through? So you could say two ways. One is, you could say, and some Achronim say this, that the whole din of kavana by mitzvos is actually midrabanan, and that's why it's only a din l'chadchila. That min ha-Torah, you actually don't need kavana. So when we're saying the l'chadchila you do, so that's what we mean. That min ha-Torah, a mitzvah, is immune to kavana considerations. But midrabanan, Chazal required kavana. Which perhaps can go well with some ideas that we mentioned recently, that daraisas are more inherent, the drabanans are more about you. So the notion that kavana is something that only exists on a drabana level as a requirement could maybe appeal from that perspective. But then it's interesting. So what about the view that mitzvos srichos kavana? Is it possible to say that kavana is drabana and still the mitzvah is disqualified without it? So maybe, right, that's something we've discussed throughout, right? That maybe Chazal, when they make a requirement on top of a mitzvah in HaTorah, we've seen many times throughout this year that maybe that can actually redefine a level on a mitzvah in HaTorah. And there are some who say that. The Tshuva's Kol Aryeh for example, maintains that explanation here, that yes, kavara is a din derabanan, and still it could be ma'akev the mitzvah min ha-Torah. It could be that Chazal added this requirement of kavana, which without it, the mitzvah min ha-Torah is no good, according to mitzvah shvichas kavana. Or you could say it a different way. And you could say that the idea that mitzvos l'chadchila require kavana, that maybe comes from a whole different din. It's not a requirement in the mitzvah. It's not a detail of any given mitzvah. But maybe it's a separate value. And there are a number of achronim who take this particular approach, that there is a mitzvah in the Torah of V'yavadetem es Hashem Elokeichem b'chol levavchem. You shall serve God with all of your heart. So the Rambam understands in Sefer HaMitzvos that that pasuk is coming to tell us a daily obligation of tefillah, which sounds like how the Gemara in Tainus understands it, Ezohi Avodah Shavaleib, Zohi Tefillah. So the Rambam says that pasuk that we say every day, that pasuk is telling you there's a mitzvah of tefillah on a daily basis. But the Ramban disagrees. And the Ramban says that no, it's coming to tell us that when you serve God in general, you should serve God with all of your heart. So it could be that we're just coming from two different places here. That the mitzvah of shofar, the mitzvah of matzah, and the mitzvah of Sfiras Omer, whatever it is, every mitzvah has its own rules. And kavana is not one of those rules. So that's why you could say mitzvos ain't srichos kavana, because the mitzvah of shofar, of matzah, could exist regardless of your kavana. But the idea that l'chachilu you need to have kavana, that's from a different mitzvah. That's not from hilchos matzah or from hilchos shofar. That's from hilchos v'yavadetem mishum l'keichem b'chol levavchem. That your avoda has to be with awareness and commitment. That's its own din. And that's why l'chachila, and maybe more than that, you need to have kavana for mitzvos. But the possibility that it's not ma'akev, that we would say mitzvos ain't srichos kavana, that just means that the mitzvah itself doesn't have that rule. But your avodas Hashem has that rule. So therefore, for sure, l'chachila, that's something that you have to have in mind. That is all brought into some discussions that try to answer the question of, if we say mitzvos do need kavana, so what is the source, min ha-Torah? One could wonder, you know, if you really need a source, because you could maintain that it's not something that specifically needs a pasuk to explain it. It could be that just that's what a mitzvah is. You know, a mitzvah has to be an intentional act, or it could be that acts in general to be associated with their actors have to have some level of intent and awareness. So whether it even needs a source is itself an interesting question, but that's one of the suggestions, that maybe it comes from something along those lines, or similar psukim that are sometimes also invoked. Okay, so far so good? Okay, so this also casts a little more ambiguity on the language of the Shulchan Aruch. So when the Shulchan Aruch says that kein halacha, that mitzvah srichos kavana, we don't really know what that means. Is it addressing the same kind of scenarios that the Gemara has? That whether or not if you blow shofar as a musical instrument, or whether or not if you eat matzah, so is that going to count as a mitzvah? Or maybe it means mitzvah shrichas kavana, that la halacha, in practice, you need to have kavana because that's what your avodas Hashem requires. So all of that still is somewhat up in the air, even though as a matter of policy, what that translates to is we're going to try to have kavana in every possible case, and the nafkaminas are probably going to be narrowed in light of those aspects. Now, just one other interesting detail to fillet, and we'll recap again tomorrow. I want to turn it to the more specific issues of the Seder night and Kavana for the Seder night. It'll segue us back into those mitzvos. But there is an interesting question. You have to figure out how this fits in. That there are some who maintain, and if you saw the Rashba and Rosh Hashanah, it seems to be going along these lines, and that in the Achronim you find this idea also is the truth about this and the truth is based Yitzchak. That what if there is Kavana, but Kavana is from someone else on your behalf? Does that count? What do you think? Can somebody else provide Kavana on your behalf? All right.
If you're saying it's that knowledge of the mitzvah and obligations, you're instructing the person, presumably you're also directly understanding the obligation, but if it's about a desire to do the mitzvah, well then you're, you know, outsourcing it to some other person, kind of takes away from that desire for the mitzvah. So it might not be from that perspective.
So it's an interesting way to put it. See, at some point out, the way the Rashba and Rosh Hashanah, if you saw this, notes that the fact that when the Gemara talks about the whole question in terms of matzah is you're being compelled. So why does it go out of its way to have a non-Jew compelling you as part of the scenario? Why doesn't it say that a Jew compelled you or a Beis Din compelled you? Right, especially because we know that's something the Beis Din sometimes does. Right, that Beis Din may have a role in kefiya and mitzvos. And I think we noted that if we're talking about staka or something like that, Beis Din compelling and staka, right, that's a preview that's a sugya in the first paragraph of Basra next year. So that is understandable because staka brings about practical results. So there's a value to compelling people to give staka, whether or not there's any schus that accrues to the giver. Now, by the way, parenthetically, the whole discussion of chesed and whether chesed requires intent from the giver and how much there is a mitzvah accomplished when somebody does chesed without intent or with double intent actually is its own topic, has its own sources, which is also interesting. And that there may be whole added element that especially a result-based mitzvah where you're helping somebody, so there also can come from different directions for its own reasons. That there is a argument to be made that a mitzvah like staka is considered significant even without kavana because the maisa of the person is helped. While at the same time, the idea that chesed is a fulfillment of a halachta bedrachav, and it's supposed to cultivate a divine personality, so that may require all the more so that you do have an awareness and a connection to what you're doing. So where exactly mitzvot, ben adam l'chaveiro, and chesed and the like fit into this really has its own set of rules. But the notion of, let's say, Beis Din forcing you to eat matzah or the like, so it seems like the Gemara is intentionally keeping that out of the discussion. And that's how the Rashba reads it. The Yitzchak has his truth about this. So that's also interesting because that only seems to go to the element of the mitzvah itself. Right? As far as your personal schar, connection to the mitzvah, doesn't seem like there should be any more of that just because the one who's forcing you is a Jew who's chayiv in the mitzvah rather than a non-Jew. But the notion, if you want to say that the mitzvah otherwise would not have been good, because the mitzvah is lacking in the elements, so then maybe it's possible for a different Jew to provide those elements, even if it's not the one who is actively doing the mitzvah itself. Make sense? Okay, so we'll quickly recap, but again, just to delineate things in your mind, so I think that's basically where we'll close it in terms of the general discussion of mitzvos rechus kavana. There could be another point or two to add. It's kind of an infinite sugi a little bit, so there's always more to say about this. But as far as our general overview of those issues, so we'll kind of cap it here. Tomorrow we will pivot to kavana within specific mitzvos of the Seder, such as Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim and Matzah and Maror. And when it comes to the question of Afikomen, there is a specific discussion to be had about Kavana and Tanai and some very fascinating things. So Bez Hashem, that's on our immediate agenda starting tomorrow. Okay, so just to kind of recap what we spoke about today. So we talked about the two different tracks here, the idea that a mitzvah may or may not count without Kavana, but presumably there is still a separate question of a l'chadchila need for Kavana, or maybe even more than that, that maybe without Kavana the Gavra is not really accomplishing anything personally, maybe he doesn't have any schar mitzvah, etc., etc. Maybe there are distinctions to be drawn, and that comes up in a number of ways. It comes up in the question how to understand the statement of the Shulchan Aruch, the context of Kriya Shema, that some say mitzvahs need, some say mitzvahs don't need, and v'chein halacha the mitzvahs do need. So the whole discussion how to understand that, is that the Lashon Sofek? Is that specific to Kriya Shema? Or is that even just separate from the question of whether the mitzvah is fulfilled, saying that l'chachila you need kavana? So discussed how some Rishonim do maintain that l'chachila you do need kavana. It saw that the question comes up that maybe you're not even accomplishing anything as far as schar mitzvah, just a question whether the mitzvah is accomplished in itself. We talked about what practical ramifications that would have. Let's say, for example, if somebody wants to do a mitzvah a second time, is there a value to that? It's a question that's hard to really paskin. It just really addresses l'chachilas. And we know as far as a bracha is concerned, you wouldn't be able to make a bracha a second time, but maybe that doesn't necessarily tell us the whole story, and maybe the mitzvah itself may still have value if done a second time. And we discussed the whole question of the Reb Chaim and the Esrog and the various implications that that story had. And then the question of if there is indeed an obligation of kavana that's not ma'akev, you can still have the position mitzvah zayin tzrichos kavana. So how does that work, especially according to Rishonim that say there's no l'chachilas or b'dievetz on a level of minhag Torah? And we discussed basically two approaches to that. One is to say that really it's an obligation midrabbana, and then if that's true, it could still be that there's the opinion mitzvah srichos kavana, that maybe the Darabanan could redefine the Daraisa. And it could also be that it's minhag Torah, but that it's a different mitzvah minhag Torah. It's just not a part of the details of each mitzvah, but rather it's part of a klolistic mitzvah, like the Ramban says in Sefer HaMitzvahs, to disagree with the Rambam, that the mitzvah of Yavadat Hashem Elokeichem B'chol Levavchem is going to require that you do mitzvahs with awareness and intent, separate from whether that's a part of the internal rule of any given mitzvah. And then we talked also about the question of kavana coming from somewhere else. Does that help? And that's how some of the Rishonim, some of the Achronim point out that it sounds like from the fact that the scenario in the Gemara is non-Jews forcing you to eat matzah, it sounds like if Jews were forcing you to eat matzah, that would be a different story. So from the perspective of your connection, it's hard to see why that should really help at all. You're still just as disconnected and still schlepped against your will just as much. But the question of whether the mitzvah itself has all the elements in order for there to be a presumed kavana, so then maybe there's where we could see a difference. Okay, so tomorrow, specific mitzvahs and how they play out. And now, mincha, which requires kavana of a different level. So who would like to lead us? Maybe, are you nodding? Okay, you're elected.